Support for Homer Grown comes from Woda Botanicals, a retail store featuring tea, spices, herbal remedies, and books. Plant people focused on food, medicine, and discovery. In Homer at 3939 Lake Street and on the web at wodabotanicals.com. Additional support for Homer Grown comes from Wagon Wheel Garden and Pet, providing plants and garden supplies for South Peninsula's gardeners. Open year-round Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, and Saturday, 10 to 5. Learn more at akwagonwheel.com and at 907-235-8777. Hello and welcome to Homer Grown. This is a show about gardening, agriculture, and wild habitat. My name is Desiree Hagen, and I live on a micro farm in Fritz Creek, Alaska. On this episode, the topic is mushrooms. And full disclosure, when I talk about living on a micro farm in Fritz Creek, Alaska, this week we're going to go to that micro farm and talk to Darius Klein, owner and operator of Fritz Creek Fungi, and one of my best friends. You would think that in talking to someone that is one of your close friends, that it would be an easy conversation. But if you know me or you know Darius, you might know that Darius is a very linear thinker, whereas I am a very lateral thinker, which sometimes makes for kind of interesting interviews. This interview lasted several hours, and I had to take out some of the parts about mushrooms and their relationship to religion, or how Santa Claus is related to Amanita muscaria. We'll save it for the Homer Grown Christmas special. For this episode, we talk about mushroom cultivation, biofabrication, medicinal mushrooms, as well as wild foraging. And Nicole Arevalo has your weekly rundown of events and opportunities in local agriculture.
Yeah, when I heard myself on the radio, I was really surprised at how dry and sarcastic I sounded. I was like, I don't like that at all. But apparently that's who I am.
All right, so to begin with, can you introduce yourself?
My name's Darius Klein. I run Fritz Creek Fungi.
So you deal with mushrooms?
Yes.
When did you first become interested in mushrooms?
I started growing mushrooms about 7 years ago. A couple of friends of mine spawned the interest.
Is that a pun?
Yeah. Yes, it is. I had one older friend that I used to grow shiitakes on coffee grounds and logs in his driveway, and I was really fascinated by the concept of growing mushrooms, and at the time knew absolutely nothing about how mushrooms grow or even what they are. So there were just a couple little things like that that sort of caught my interest, and then over the years I pretty much self-educated myself to learn more and more about them, and eventually decided to start trying to grow them myself. And after 7 years, I feel like I still know a fairly small amount about them. There's hundreds of species that you can cultivate and thousands of species to learn about. So I feel like I'll never get tired of learning new things about them and expanding my knowledge. I've always been focused mostly on cultivation. I've learned a lot of other things on the way, of course. Paul Stamets was a big inspiration for me in the beginning.
Who is Paul Stamets?
He's a pretty well-known mycologist. He's been cultivating since probably the 80s. He was formally trained as a mycologist, so he worked in a lab for a long time. Eventually went into his own cultivation endeavors, and he's really into remediation, medicinal mushroom use, and he's also a really good public speaker, so
when I think of the term remediation, in my head, I picture like maybe mushrooms being used for oil spills or to eat plastic.
Yes. Yeah. Oyster mushrooms are really good, can be really good for cleaning up hydrocarbons and oil spills. Mushrooms can help get rid of radioactive material. They can eat plastics, all sorts of other toxic materials. So he's done a lot of research on those topics. And then also the use of medicinal mushrooms for health.
Going back to the farm here, I know that you grow certain medicinal mushrooms.
I grow reishi, and I also grow lion's mane. There's other medicinal mushrooms that I use and I market, but some of them are wild harvest, like chaga and turkey tail. Turkey tail can be cultivated, but it's pretty easy to find wild, so I've just been wild harvesting it. And from those mushrooms, I usually make tinctures and sometimes teas. They can also be medicinal when they're eaten for dinner as well.
So when we say that they're medicinal, how are they medicinal specifically?
They all have really strong immune support properties. Lion's mane traditionally was used for healing the gut. There's a lot of research lately on how it can help repair nerve damage throughout the body. Mental issues from age or disease, nerve damage from injuries, and nerve damage in the gut.
The lion's mane, which is my favorite.
Yeah.
It tastes like crab or maybe like shrimp or something.
Yeah, the texture is very seafood-like. We make tinctures with the medicinal mushrooms. The lion's mane is both edible and medicinal. So it's the only one that's kind of in both departments. Yeah, the lion's manes are amazing. And luckily, quite easy to grow as far as mushrooms go. Yeah, when I eat lion's mane for dinner, I always feel different. My dreams are different. My whole state of mind changes a little bit. Pretty interesting.
What are some other medicinal mushrooms?
Turkey tail can be really good for... Actually, I can't really say certain things about that, but...
You can't say it because maybe it hasn't been peer-reviewed.
Yeah, you're not allowed to say that it cures anything, or you can say that it can help with certain types of cancer.
Because this is something that Paul Stamets, a lot of his lectures are about, is his mother. He used it for his mother who had cancer.
Yes, his story about saving his mother from cancer with turkey tail extracts.
Yes.
Yeah, Six Ways Mushrooms Can Save the World is a really good YouTube video on Paul Stamets for a quick education about him.
I even wrote down the six ways mushrooms can save the world. Do you want to hear all the ways?
Yes.
Number one, cleaning up oil, like oil spills. Number two, fighting pollution. Three, fighting disease. Four, fighting insects.
Yeah, mushrooms can be used to help with carpenter ants and things like that. Other household pests, maybe agricultural pests as well.
I mean, this is a little bit nebulous, but fixing the earth. Just in general. And then number six was a sustainable fuel source.
I'm not sure about that one.
Okay, so going back to your own cultivation here, you had mentioned that certain mushrooms can be cultivated and then others cannot. What determines if a mushroom can be grown in a controlled environment?
Some mushrooms are called mycorrhizal mushrooms, and they need some type of host plant to grow. So usually a tree, like a chanterelle, has to have a tree. There's a couple different species of trees that it can be mycorrhizal with, but it has to have one of those trees in order to grow. So when you try to cultivate it artificially, you can't get it to fruit. And then there's some mushrooms that may be cultivatable, but nobody has ever figured out how. Morels are kind of on the fence where people are starting to figure out how to cultivate them, but nobody's really figured out a reliable, easy method. So there's a lot of mushrooms that have just a lot of mysteries on what their needs and wants are. We're kind of learning new things every day about them.
So you talk about mycorrhizal mushrooms. Are there other types?
Mycorrhizal mushrooms are just one, you know, one sort of category of mushrooms. The type that I grow, oyster mushrooms, lion's manes, shiitake mushrooms, a couple of others, they're all wood-loving mushrooms. They don't really need a living tree to grow. They just need the right nutrients. So they're much simpler to cultivate. Feed them wood chips and coffee grounds, and they grow mushrooms.
So can we talk about the process of growing mushrooms? In the mushroom farm, I can see a lot of white bags.
Yes.
Is this how it starts? Explain to me the process from start to finish.
Okay. Most of the mushrooms that we grow here are called primary decomposers. They like to eat wood for the most part, and they want to be the first thing that eats the wood when the tree is cut down, or in this case, turned into wood chips. So we grow mushrooms mostly on wood chips. We use spent coffee grounds from the local coffee shops as a nutrient supplement for the wood chips. I really like using waste streams to grow mushrooms on. They're free, and it keeps them from, you know, going in the dumpsters and landfills. Coffee grounds in particular are a really amazing food source for mushrooms. And there's lots of coffee grounds anywhere in America. So we mix up wood chips and coffee grounds. We put them in bags. We put the bags in a box that gets pumped full of steam, which pasteurizes the wood chips and the coffee grounds.
Is it just wood chips and coffee ground? Then that's it?
A little bit of gypsum is the only other ingredient.
What is that?
Gypsum. It's a mineral that it comes out of mines. They make sheetrock out of it, baby powder. It's also made from gypsum.
So this is the only component that isn't coming from a waste stream locally.
Yes.
You know, because you're harvesting alder that's been, maybe people are clearing their land and they're getting rid of their alder branches. So you collect those.
Yes.
Chip them up, collect the spent coffee grounds.
Yeah, alders are really easy to find in Homer. They grow kind of like weeds and people cut them out of their yards. They're super easy to find. So I'm never really cutting down living trees just for the purpose of mushroom farming. I'm just using ones that already needed to get cut.
Do people in places where alder doesn't grow as readily, is that what they use as their substrate?
Other mushroom farmers?
Yeah.
It varies from region to region. Some mushroom farms use scrap wood from mills or cabinet makers, things like that. Some mushroom farms use straw instead of wood chips. And some mushroom farms probably cut trees down to grow mushrooms on. But most of the mushroom farms that grow the kind of mushrooms that I grow and that use some type of wood or straw-based substrate are all pretty small.
Is it basically like you need a carbon? Is that what the mushrooms need, or what is it mm-hmm. in the wood chips and the straw?
Carbon and nitrogen are sort of the simple components of their diet.
And then you get nitrogen from the coffee grounds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lots of nitrogen. And coffee grounds are rich enough in nitrogen that most plants can't handle that amount of nitrogen.
Straight coffee grounds.
Straight coffee grounds. Mushrooms can handle roughly twice the amount of nitrogen as plants can. So you can feed the coffee grounds to the mushrooms. When the mushrooms have consumed some of that nitrogen, then what's left can be put in a garden and used for plants.
So, okay, where we last let off, you've got the substrate and you're putting it into bags, and then it goes into a steam box.
Mm-hmm. It gets pasteurized with steam, which kills anything that's already trying to grow on the wood chips or the coffee grounds. The coffee grounds can mold really easily. They're very rich, and so there's all sorts of things trying to eat that food source. So that's where the pasteurization comes in. Once the wood chips and coffee grounds have been pasteurized, then I add some culture of the type of mushroom I'm trying to grow. So while that substrate is being prepared and pasteurized, I'm making culture in my lab to put on that. So there's another process that's happening simultaneously that I always have a hard time explaining.
Right. So this mushroom farm has various components to it. You have the lab, which is its own separate building that's as much as it can be a sterile environment. I know that because I have never been in there.
Yeah. I do some sterile lab work in there. I try to keep it clean. Most bigger mushroom farms do one or the other. There's companies that produce spawn in a lab, and that's their entire business. And then there's mushroom farms that actually grow the mushrooms and usually buy their culture from a lab. Here, we don't have any labs in Alaska that produce mushroom spawn or mushroom culture, so I just do the entire process. Yeah, it's a small operation, but it's also really self-sufficient because we do all of the steps, including chipping the tree, collecting the coffee grounds, all the way down to harvesting the mushrooms and selling them.
Where are the mushroom cultures from?
I do have some genetics I've collected from the wild, and then some of them I just get from other mushroom growers. Some of them I order off of websites, sort of just collecting genetics from wherever I can. Another place I get genetics from is the grocery store, buying mushrooms. When there's specialty mushrooms at the grocery store, I can take those mushrooms in the lab and clone some tissue from them and use them. There's no patents on mushroom genetics yet. It's fair game to get genetics from wherever
awesome.
You can. You can only assume that the people that are selling mushrooms to a big grocery store probably have really good genetics. Since they're larger commercial farms, then it's a great bet to get their genetics and try it out.
There's even a fridge that's dedicated to the cultures.
Culture storage. Yeah, they're called liquid cultures. So it's the mycelium of mushrooms growing in a liquid broth in a jar. It's how I store all of the genetics that I grow.
What is mycelium?
Yeah, mycelium is, it's often described as sort of the roots of the mushroom. I find that kind of inaccurate because the mycelium is actually the living thing. It's a mass of white fiber that grows either in the wood. So in the wild, it would be growing inside of a decomposing tree. Or if it's soil type of mushroom, it would be living in the soil on the forest floor. So it's this mass of white fiber that consumes nutrients under the ground. It is the primary stage of the life cycle. So that mass of white fiber is the mushroom. It is the living thing. The actual mushroom that you see growing on top of the ground is just the reproductive organ. So its primary purpose is to get above the ground, release spores into the air so that the spores can, you know, get carried somewhere or blow in the wind to start another colony of mycelium somewhere.
I mean, mushrooms look like reproductive organs.
The
phallic
aspect of mushrooms is, you know,
apparent.
Pretty apparent. They don't have gender. Fungus has no gender. But if it did, it would be kind of.
Okay, so going back,
we have our bags full of substrate. They've been sterilized. Now we're going to add the culture that you have been working on in a lab.
Yes, the culture that's added comes from the lab. It's in a jar and it lives on rye berries usually or some type of grain. It gets added to the bag, mixed in, which is basically we just shake it in. And then it has to sit for a couple weeks for a step called colonization, which is the mycelium of the mushroom just growing through the bag of wood chips and coffee grounds and consuming all the nutrients.
This is what happens in the fruiting chamber?
No, it happens before the fruiting chamber. Most mushroom farms have a room for that, which we kind of haven't built yet, so we sort of wing it.
So that's just what, when we see these bags kind of hanging out in this
sitting
room.
Around. Yeah, the lab doubles as a colonization space right now. So they sit for a couple weeks. The mycelium grows through the wood chips, consumes the nutrients, and sort of turns it into this white fibrous block. Once that's finished, 2 to 4 weeks usually, then the bags go into the fruiting chamber to fruit the actual mushrooms. So the bags get holes poked in the side and then put on a shelf, put in a climate controlled room that has humidity controls, and they sit in there and fruit.
Is it the introduction of oxygen that causes them to fruit?
There's different triggers for fruiting. Introducing oxygen is a major one. Introducing light is also a big one.
So these aren't grown in like a dark, dingy area?
No. A lot of people think of mushroom farms as totally dark caves or something, which mushroom farms used to be in caves. But
didn't they used to be old coal mines
thing? Something like that, yeah. Or natural caves. I think England was where the first, you know, people started growing mushrooms in caves. But the type of mushrooms that we grow here actually need some light to grow. They don't get any nutrients from the light. It's just a trigger for fruiting. So it kind of helps them. Well, in the wild, it would tell them that they're at the surface of the ground or at the surface of the tree. They would find light, figure out that that's where they should fruit. We fruit from the side of the bag, so it's a vertical surface. Because they're tree-loving mushrooms, they like to grow horizontally out of a vertical surface rather than like flat on the ground like a button mushroom from the store.
People think of mushrooms growing on cow patties. If it's not a wood-loving mushroom, then is it a manure-loving mushroom?
Most of the other types of mushrooms that are cultivated are, yes, they grow on some type of manure. Usually the manure is composted first, and then the mushroom is introduced to it. And those kinds of mushroom farms are very different. They're usually really, really big, mega, giant mushroom farms that take up probably hundreds of acres. And they often use a lot of pesticides, and they grow a totally different kind of mushroom. So they grow a button mushroom from the store is manure-loving mushroom. So yes, it grows on poop.
So then are we eating pesticides when we buy mushrooms from the store?
It's something to watch out for sure.
Okay, so back to the fruiting chamber. The fruiting chamber, that's the last step.
Yeah, they take about a week to fruit when they're first put in there. Each time we harvest off of the bags, it's called a flush, is a fruiting of mushrooms. So the same bags, we'll harvest off of them after about a week for the first flush, and then usually three or four more flushes after that from the same bags. So once we put them in there, we continue to get repetitive harvests off of them. And then after that, they go into a big compost and go into the garden.
And then sometimes they continue to pop up in the garden.
Yes, sometimes the mushrooms end up in the garden. Always really fun to see.
Okay, random question time.
So in your experience with mushrooms, would you think that mushrooms are sentient?
I think they are. Their intelligence is different than ours.
Yeah.
But they're extremely good at problem solving. They're very, very sensitive and very aware.
I think we often think of intelligence from a
anthropocentric view as humans and judge other species by the same measure as what we would consider intelligence in humans.
Yeah. There's a lot of things we don't know about fungus. We're not really even sure how they communicate. We know that mycelium can move a lot of information. Mycelial networks can communicate with other mycelial networks, but we're not actually sure how they're even doing that. We don't know if it's light, electrical signals. It's kind of mysterious stuff.
I was listening to a speech with Paul Stamets, and he said that the internet, as we know it, you know, on a computer, was the consequence of a biologically successful model. So he was talking about mycelium being like the original internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the mycorrhizal mushrooms. They need a host plant to live. They need a host plant in order to grow. And they help bring nutrients to the plant or the tree from further than the roots can reach. and the tree shares some of its excreted proteins with the mushroom. So they have a symbiotic relationship dietarily, but they also, the mycelial network can communicate information to the host plant or between host plants, so they can network plants and trees together. And if one of them is experiencing something like a pest or an environmental change, like not getting enough light or it's too dry, the mycelial network can share that information with trees nearby and sort of try to help them do something about it.
In talking about the intelligence of mushrooms, I was watching videos where
mushrooms would, they would get inside of an insect's gut and start to control the insect.
Yes, they are called cordyceps. And yes, it colonizes the insect while it's alive, basically takes control of its brain, tells it to go to a really nice high spot on the ground, and then eventually kills the insect, consumes the nutrients of the body, and then fruits out of the top of its head. Yeah, really exotic mushroom species. Also, really potent medicinal mushroom as well.
What better way to spread, you know, and to propagate itself than by taking a host, basically controlling it to walk to the most ideal spot?
Yeah, pretty interesting. And a good argument for the intelligence of fungus. I sort of have a theory that fungi are pretty much controlling us, you know, the entire human race. But
are there mushrooms that can survive very extreme conditions?
Yeah, the mushrooms are pretty resilient. They're really tough with cold. Sort of the thing mushrooms are most susceptible to is heat. They don't like it hot. Even like 120 degrees can be hot enough to kill a mushroom species.
Are there mushrooms in space?
I believe that spores can survive in space. They're extremely resilient. The spore, which I guess we didn't talk about, is sort of the, you know, it comes off of the gills of a mushroom, and it's pretty similar to pollen. So it's like an airborne genetic seed of the mushroom. But yes, spores can survive in space. They can't grow in space. But they could theoretically, you know, travel between planets, show up on some other suitable planet if there was one. And
so are mushrooms aliens?
Possibly.
The reason I asked is I was reading something that said that mushrooms
predate plants.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, mushrooms have survived 5 extinctions.
Mm-hmm.
Now into the 6th.
Yeah, well, so fungus is the first component of creating life on like a barren planet. So if you have a planet that's just rock and there's no soil, the fungus can eat the rock and start creating soil so other life forms can come in behind it and build a beautiful planet like this one that we live on. Mushrooms are, they're like the first part of creating life. And then they're also, they're the great disassemblers of waste material. You know, they digest all the things that aren't needed. They're just sort of dying or going to waste. Yeah, there's other things, you know, bacteria has a pretty major role in decomposition too, but yeah, fungus is very important for the complete life cycle of life and death.
So I don't know if this is true, but before there were trees, before plants had lignans, there used to be mushrooms that were as tall as trees.
Yeah, there was a period of time after one of the great extinctions where most plants and animals were just barely surviving on Earth. And mushrooms were, you know, the dominant life form on Earth. And there was these mushrooms called Prototaxites. And they were something like 25 feet tall, sort of woody, kind of missile-shaped, kind of phallic-shaped mushrooms. Pointy on top. They lived on all the continents. Yeah, they were kind of the biggest thing, biggest living thing on Earth for, I don't know, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of years. They're sort of the ancestor of the tree conch mushroom.
During the time of these Prototaxites, what other life forms were around?
There were insects. There were small rodents. It was after the dinosaurs.
they were, you know, reptiles were pretty much beaten down to just very few species and smaller animals.
They say that fungus and animals are more closely related genetically than plants or animals or plants or fungus. So when life, you know, early life on Earth came out of the water, they say that there was a super kingdom that was both fungus and animals that preceded both those kingdoms. And at some point it split into two kingdoms and the mushrooms went under the ground and the animals went over the ground. But the similarities between fungus and animals are we digest our food with the same type of acids and we breathe oxygen and exhale carbon dioxide, which is the reverse of plants.
Let's switch gears.
You had been doing some experiments with King Strophoria, or are they also called wine caps?
Yeah, the culinary name is wine cap. The other name is the garden giant. It's kind of the other common name. But yeah, King Strophoria.
Oh, those are the ones that get really big.
They can get really big.
Those are the ones in the high tunnel right now, right?
I don't know. But yeah, King Strophoria is a really neat mushroom. It's really fun for gardeners to experiment with or use. It can live on wood chips, and it can also live on compost or really rich soil, and does really well in garden beds. So you can mix it in with really rich garden beds, plants in the garden bed, and it can sort of help the plants thrive. And you can get mushrooms in your greenhouse or in your garden. They're really delicious, edible mushrooms. They taste almost exactly like peanuts, in my opinion. Kind of a unique flavor.
How would you describe some of the other flavors of the mushrooms that you sell?
Oh, that's a tough one. People ask me a lot about the flavors. I'm not really good with the words. Yeah, most of the mushrooms have some type of savory flavor. Shiitakes, which we also grow a little bit of, they have a really unique flavor. And then some of the wild mushrooms we sell also have different flavors.
You only grow mushrooms in the summertime.
Yeah, it's a seasonal mushroom farm. We could grow in the winter, but there's not really much of a market. Maybe eventually we will do it year-round and try to market to the grocery stores. But honestly, it's so much work to cultivate mushrooms that it's nice to get a break in the winter.
When you talk about work, so I mean, you have work in the lab that you do, but there's also physical work.
Yeah, mixing up wood chips and coffee grounds, feeding trees into the wood chipper, mixing it all up, bagging it, shaking the bags, and then harvesting usually twice a day. Mushrooms grow a lot faster than plants, so we harvest almost constantly. My goal for this mushroom farm is to grow 100 pounds a week. That was a goal I set a couple years ago, and I'm not there yet. We produce probably 30 or 40 pounds a week.
Are mushrooms a source of protein?
Yeah. Yeah, they're a really good source of protein. No, there's no fat, there's no carbs. It's just protein. Mushrooms are really good for vegetarians. I'm trying to remember, there's some things missing. Mushrooms can sort of partially substitute for meat, but definitely not. You're not getting all of the things that meat can give you. Really good source of protein. And they can be dried and stored, you know, without refrigeration. So they can be a really good sort of winter food supply. Dry the mushrooms and then rehydrate them and cook them for dinner.
There's other ways to preserve them though, right? What are some of the other ways?
We make tinctures with the medicinal mushrooms.
So I know that Fritz Creek Fun Guy sometimes does the farmer's market and you sell mushrooms and kombucha. What else do you sell?
We do sell kombucha at the market stand. We also do some fermented foods. We make kimchi.
Honey,
sauerkraut. Sometimes we do fermented crock pickles. What else do we sell at the market? Mushroom tinctures, kombucha vinegar.
Who do you sell to? Do you sell to any restaurants?
Yeah, things have been a little interesting the last couple of years, but farmers market's been the primary place that we sell them. Some of the lodges across the bay have been really a really great market for us, and some of the restaurants that do higher end cuisine and like weekly specials and things like that like to buy mushrooms from us.
Are you planning on having a steady supply of mushrooms going into the fall?
Sort of. Pretty much market them till farmer's market ends. After that, probably start kind of closing things down.
Do you have any goals for the mushroom farm moving forward?
Yeah, we're expanding a little bit and trying to make the process more efficient so we can grow more mushrooms with less work. I guess that's the goal of any farmer probably, but right now the process is a little bit labor intensive and it makes it sort of challenging to produce a lot. I've been upgrading equipment, making more workspace for the mushroom farm, and just slowly kind of building it bigger and bigger, out of pocket mostly.
So this kind of segues into the next question that I have. What is the best tool the farm has acquired within the last year?
Probably the wood chipper.
Incorrect.
Oh, yeah?
Just kidding. I think the broad fork, but the wood chipper and also maybe the bucket for the tractor.
Definitely. The loading bucket on our tractor is the most amazing thing for making compost. Really excited about compost these days.
How much compost do you think gets produced here? I mean, it's pretty substantial.
50 yards probably this year. That's the equivalent of like 4.5 dump truck loads.
I think our compost game has really been upped.
Yeah, definitely. And the mushroom farm has a big part of that too. Putting it all in the garden, marketing it. A lot of mushroom farms sell the leftover substrate to gardeners as a side market.
I think that our compost, with the addition of the bucket for the tractor, our compost has a very fast turnaround.
Yeah, we've kind of gone for big compost rather than fancy compost. We don't really use like pipes or fencing to make it into pretty towers. We just have this giant mountain of just great stuff that we just turn with the tractor a lot and makes beautiful soil.
I love it so much.
I really enjoy making grow-your-own mushroom kits for people, so I want to do more of that. The King Strophoria, which we talked about, oyster mushroom kits, shiitake kits as well, which I really haven't done yet but would like to do. You haven't asked me this, but part of the concept of this farm was to sort of utilize all of the waste materials from the mushroom farm and build these beautiful gardens with it. So the greenhouse and the gardens and the vegetables that we grow and things are sort of a continuation of the process that the mushroom farm starts. So utilizing all of the waste, the mushroom farm utilizes waste streams and then utilizing the waste streams further downstream from the mushroom farm to grow plants.
The ideal is a circle.
Yeah.
You have the mushroom farm that operates off of waste products from the community.
Mm-hmm.
The mushrooms feed the people.
Mm-hmm.
Then they feed the garden. The byproduct of the mushrooms feeds the garden mm-hmm. through compost.
Mm-hmm.
The garden feeds the workers.
Mm-hmm.
And the workers make the whole thing happen.
Yeah, we have kind of a neat sort of cycle going on here. Making use of the coffee, feeding the coffee drinkers mushrooms.
Also, one of the structures, wasn't it just a house that somebody gave away?
Yeah, we salvage a lot of materials for the farm. We have an entire house that we got moved from a different location because it was getting torn down. So we took it apart, brought it to the farm, putting it back together. We've done an enormous amount of salvaging from the landfill, just utilizing resources that are available and keeping things from getting put in the landfill.
I'm really happy that I live here.
It's a great place. The only thing, the only other part of the cycle we haven't discussed is we have, chickens and goats that we raise.
And bees.
And we've also had hogs, which were quite the experience.
Can you describe the setup of the farm?
Yeah, the farm is just a community of friends kind of living in cabins, mostly seasonal. We have more people living here in the summer, and then in the winter it's just kind of you and me, and I think that's it,
right? That's it right now.
So sort of a seasonal commune farm, how I would describe.
So many people live on this farm.
Yeah.
Myself included. If we were planning a perfect apocalypse team, what archetype of a person are we missing? Like a builder is an example.
We could use builders, experienced builders that want to live here and sort of help build infrastructure. What else are we missing? Probably.
I think a healer or like a someone who's trained in medicine, and maybe a hunter, because I just want, I want like a freezer full of moose.
Yeah, we need a hunter, a massage therapist, a naturopathic doctor, a pool boy. Yeah, we definitely need somebody to mow some lawns. And yeah, always room for new
energy.
New energy here, yeah.
One thing that we didn't talk about is the use of mushrooms as a biofabrication.
Very few people are aware of that. So reishi mushroom, which is one of the medicinal mushrooms that we grow, has this really interesting quality where the mycelium of the mushroom, once it grows through the wood chips, it becomes really strong. And me and a whole bunch of other people across the world are starting to experiment with growing building materials with mycelium of mostly reishi. It's a pretty new field. There is one company that's actually doing it commercially now. They're called Ecovative, and they make packing materials for various things. I believe they have a contract with Dell Computers and IKEA Furniture to make those styrofoam blocks that keep things from moving around in a box when they get shipped. But as far as I know, they're the only company that's commercializing the use of mushroom-grown materials. So I've been doing my own experiments with it. My goal with that is to grow dwellings, living structures out of mycelium.
Can you talk about the dwelling that you have already made?
Yeah, it's an experiment I did that is, it's a cylinder-shaped object. It's about 5 feet across, 6 feet tall, and the wall of it is about 6 inches thick. So it's kind of shaped like a large wooden barrel, and it's hollow. And it's just sort of a big thing that I grew out of wood chips and reishi mycelium just to see what it would be like on a to make a bigger object out of it. And it worked. It's sitting out in the driveway. And
have you thought about putting a domed roof on the top so it would look like an actual mushroom?
Yeah, it is a experiment and also a
art installation.
Art installation. So it's going to be a rather large mushroom sculpture that will have doors and windows so kids can play inside of it. And so it's kind of a kid's playhouse slash art project.
Could it actually fruit?
Yeah, it's dried. So once I grew it, I dried the mycelium out. But it did do some fruiting while it was growing. Yeah, it's a really side project I'm really excited about is building things with mushroom mycelium. It's pretty inexpensive to do and also not particularly labor intensive as far as alternative building techniques go. It's very strong and also very insulative material. Could be really useful for Alaskan structures.
Is this an outdoor material? Because it's sitting outside right now.
It is. It's covered. My thoughts on it are to make sort of the core of a structure with it. So it would be structural as well as insulative, but in order to be out in the weather, it would need some sort of roof and coatings on the outside, like stucco, maybe paint, something like that. So it can't just sit out in the rain and not eventually get soggy.
So if you made a mold, could you actually make insulation that would replace synthetic insulation?
Yeah, you could. You could make something that would sort of replace styrofoam board. It can be cut with a saw.
It's like blue board.
Yeah, it could replace blue board. It's actually equally as insulative. It's a little bit heavier, but it could be pretty useful just for that, just to make sheets of foam out of it. Like other organic materials, it sort of needs to be like protected properly. You know, it has to be dry and kept off the ground and things like that. So it's not like some magic, amazing substance. You know, it's not as resilient as concrete as far as touching the ground or something like that. But if used properly, I think it could be really amazing, non-toxic building material.
So are there any plans for outreach and teaching other people around Alaska your methods?
Yeah, I would really like to teach some mushroom cultivation classes, maybe workshops on just the basic understanding of mushrooms as a life form, maybe some things about medicinal mushrooms. But I've always wanted to sort of share what I know about mushrooms with the community, and I would like to definitely do some workshops and classes, try to help people understand what mushrooms are and how to grow them and how to use them to make their lives better.
Are mushrooms the answer to all of the world's problems?
No. But, you know, they can help with a lot of things. Mushrooms are so popular right now that, you know, they might be a little over-sensationalized for a lot of things. But there's a lot of powerful medicine in mushrooms. And, you know, all the way from building materials to medicine to food, tons of uses for mushrooms. So they're really amazing.
Let's change the topic slightly. I want to talk about wild harvesting and foraging mushrooms.
Yeah, we do some wild harvesting commercially so that we can kind of supplement our cultivated mushrooms at the farmer's market stand. We've also marketed wild mushrooms to some of the restaurants quite successfully, which has been really funny. Sometimes we've harvested wild mushrooms literally a quarter mile from the restaurant we're selling them to, which I always thought was kind of amusing, paying us money to like walk behind the restaurant and bring them the mushrooms.
Yeah, but they don't know where we got it from.
It's true, and they don't really care either. They just want us to bring them mushrooms. But yeah, we go across the bay and harvest hedgehog mushrooms in places that I won't tell you.
You'll tell me, just not on the mic.
Right. In the tradition of the mushroom hunter, you know, mushroom hunters don't usually like to give away their hunting ground secrets. But on the other side of Kachemak Bay, there's quite an abundance of hedgehog mushrooms. They're really easy to identify, so they're pretty safe to harvest and have other people help harvest and bring them to market. And we've also harvested chicken of the woods and sold those at farmers market as well. They're a big, really bright orange wild mushroom that grows on spruce trees.
Where do you find them?
Well, I'm not going to tell, but they can be all sorts of different places.
Only on spruce trees?
Yeah, they grow on spruce trees, which is really handy because we have a lot of spruce trees around here. And the south side of the bay is quite a bit more shady and a little bit more humid, so it's better for mushroom hunting. There's also some king boletes over there, otherwise known as porcinis, which are world-class gourmet mushroom. They have amazing flavor. I've never brought any of those to market because don't usually find too many of them, and they have some problems with flies and things living in them when they get more mature, so they can be pretty tough to harvest commercially. And there's a couple others I harvest sometimes over there, but I don't sell. Angel wings kind of look like an oyster mushroom, but they're a different species. What else? I know there's others. Sometimes there's wild lion's manes and bear's tooth over there as well, which are always really fun to find.
Weren't you growing bear's tooth for a while?
Yeah, I do grow bear's tooth sometimes. It's very similar to lion's mane. It has the same flavor and the same medicinal qualities. So they're different species, but pretty similar.
What kind of mushrooms are there on this side of the bay?
You can find hedgehogs over here, hawkwings, which are kind of similar. King boletes can grow around Homer, chicken of the woods. Turkey tails can be found around here, which aren't edible, but they're medicinal mushroom.
They're not edible, but they're medicinal. Like, they aren't palatable?
They're woody. They're very woody. Like, chaga is also non-edible medicinal mushroom, but chaga grows on a birch tree. Chaga is interesting because it's not actually the fruit body of a mushroom. It's actually a
just a mycelial mass that forms on the surface of the tree. The part that we harvest is not the fruit body. There is actually a little mushroom that will grow out of a chaga chunk, like later in the cycle when the tree is like more decomposed. It can actually produce a little weedy little mushroom with a cap and a stem that people don't often see. What other mushrooms are there around here that are edible?
What about the birch polypore?
The birch polypore, I don't know too much about. I think it's medicinal, but I don't.
I made paper out of it.
Yeah, it makes really beautiful paper.
It has the consistency of a paint chip.
Of a paint chip, yeah. But it's white. Beautiful white paper.
I gotta
super amazing.
Figure out how to make it better.
And then there's artist conchs around here, which are pretty closely related to reishi, actually. And they're quite medicinal, but not, people don't use them very much. There's not quite as much information about them as reishi.
One thing that we didn't talk about is that, you know, we went inside to the fruiting chamber and looked at those mushrooms that are in a controlled environment, but there's also mushrooms that you grow outside.
Yeah, we do some really neat shiitake beds just outside the mushroom farm here. There's some good patches of alders that provide really sufficient shade. And we do these shiitake mushroom projects where I sort of grow shiitake mycelium in these bags, kind of like I do with the other mushrooms. But instead of fruiting it out of the bag, we take the mycelium and the wood chips and spread it on the ground, mix it in with the soil, cover it with leaves and duff and stuff, and then just water it in the woods, and we get these really neat shiitake patches. Yeah, they seem to grow on the ground, which is kind of interesting because a shiitake is actually a tree-loving mushroom. In the wild, it grows like up on a tree. We seem to be able to do it pretty successfully on the ground.
Okay, here's the question that's related to foraging. What about the outside conditions? So I know that people sometimes, you know, after it's been rainy, they'll go collecting. Is there a certain time that you're like, now's the perfect time, the mushrooms are fruiting?
Yeah, well, the weather here is pretty unpredictable. So, you know, when people ask me like what date is good for mushroom hunting, it's kind of hard to give them that information. But, you know, generally in the fall is when the mushrooms fruit. Some years it's a little later than others. It can even vary up to a couple of months when, like, for instance, the king boletes or the hedgehogs will come up. So it depends on when the rains come and when the temperature drops. Cold weather can sort of initiate them wanting to fruit. It's sort of their like survival mechanism of trying to reproduce before winter comes. So usually fall, except for the morels. The morels are a spring mushroom. They grow where the forest fires come through, usually the year after.
Do you know why?
I do not. I do not know why morels grow in the spring.
I mean, specifically after a fire.
Oh, yeah, I don't know that either. I'm not sure if anyone really does. Morels are, yeah, interesting mushrooms. They seem to be kind of different, just very different rhythm and nutrient needs than other wild mushrooms, but that's where they like to grow.
And that was Darius Klein, recorded at Fritz Creek Fungi Farm on September 12, 2021. Up next, Nicola Revelo has events and opportunities in local ag.
Hi, I'm Nicole from Homer Soil and Water with this week's roundup of news and tidbits on local agriculture and wild habitat too. Happening today, Saturday, September 18th, is the Harvest Moon Festival, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Soldotna Creek Park in Soldotna. It's the Kenai Peninsula's biggest local food celebration of the year, with live music, free kids' activities, food demonstrations, a pie baking contest, and the popular fermentation station. The festival will feature all sorts of locally grown and made foods, medicinal wellness and personal care products made from locally grown or wild harvested ingredients, food trucks featuring local ingredients, and educational booths. To see the schedule of events, visit the Kenai Local Food Connections website at www.kenailocalfood.org. Coming up this week, The Homer Council on the Arts is offering a mushroom sketching workshop with Kim McNett. There will be two evening sessions on September 22nd and 23rd from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Learn about the marvels of wild mushrooms through art. The group will examine fresh mushrooms and fungi, cover mushroom anatomy, sketching techniques, and spore printing. Basic sketching materials will be provided, or bring your own preferred media and collected mushrooms. Register on the Homer Council on the Arts website. Just click the calendar tab at the top. The University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service has quite a number of free online classes coming up in the next few weeks. These include a variety of classes about canning, drying, and fermenting foods, along with other topics of interest to gardeners. A few worth noting are extending the growing season with affordable ways to heat your growing area on September 23rd, an Alaska gardener's fall and winter to-do list on September 29th, and put your garden to rest on September 30th. Find out more at www.uaf.edu/ces. And lastly, fall is here, and it's the perfect time to get your soils tested so that you can give your crops, trees, hayfields, or fruit bushes their best chance for success next growing season. And if you're new to collecting soil samples for testing, just reach out to us, and we'll happily give you some pointers. All the details can be found at www.homerswcd.org, or you can always call us at 907-235-8177.
And that's it. Another one for the books. I want to thank my good friend Darius Klein for talking to us about mushrooms. You might not know this, and Darius might not remember it, but Darius once saved my life. For real. And I just want to say, Darius, I love you. And I feel like everyone should normalize telling their friends that they love them. And while I'm at it, I love you, Nicole Revelo. Thank you for your amazing input and work and everything that you do. Homer, Soil, and Water, I also love you guys too. Music for this episode comes from local musicians Carly Konimak, Kevin Cope, Ryan Black, and the band Trial and Terror. All of them have pieces of my heart. You can find their music on Bandcamp by searching Trial and Terror or Glacier Maximus. Questions, comments, or if you want to star in my upcoming B movie entitled Mushroom Spores from Outer Space, you can email Desiree, that's D-E-S-I-R-E-E, at kbbi.org. I've been your host, Desiree Hagen, reminding you to support your local farmer. Support for Homer Grown comes from Woda Botanicals, a retail store featuring tea, spices, herbal remedies, and books. Plant people focused on food, medicine, and discovery. In Homer at 3939 Lake Street and on the web at wodabotanicals.com. Additional support for Homer Grown comes from Wagon Wheel Garden and Pet, providing plants and garden supplies for South Peninsula's gardeners. Open year-round Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, and Saturday, 10 to 5. Learn more at akwagonwheel.com and at 907-235-8777.